This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Tom Hartman is the host of the nationally syndicated Tom Hartman program. It's heard locally on our sister station, 1450 WVAX, each weekday from 12 to 3, or you can listen conveniently online at tomhartman.com. A best-selling author and radio host, Tom Hartman joins us on the long line from the West Coast. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Clay. I'm great, although the weather outside has just gone bizarre. It's funny because earlier on my show today, I was debating Mark Morano, who is the James Inhofe's spokesman. You know, he's the lead guy for There's No Such Thing as Global Warming.
Right, right.
And for the first time in the history of the Pacific Northwest, we just had a tornado touchdown about 15 miles west of here.
Oh, my God.
And our county just got a severe thunderstorm and tornado warning. So if we lose power or, you know, I suddenly vanish, it probably won't be because we got hit by a tornado, but it could, you know, we could lose power or something. So
wow, and this is all going on as we speak.
As we speak.
And you're in the
never-before-seen weather.
You're in the Seattle area, right?
Portland.
Portland area. I'm sorry, forgive me. The Portland area. Are you from that area? Is that what took you to Portland?
No, we've lived here. This will be 3 years this spring, and first time I've lived west of the Mississippi, other than a summer I spent when I was 17 in San Francisco, but that's it.
Wow. Where did you grow up?
Lansing, Michigan.
In Michigan, okay. Yeah. So Tom Hartman is our guest, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Tom, I'd just like to hear your thoughts on the primaries. We had Iowa, we had New Hampshire, we got a few more coming up. Michigan, they told them to basically sit down and be quiet if they wanted to move their primaries. But what are your thoughts on some of the issues related to the recent primaries?
Well, first of all, I think that the news media does us all a disservice by calling winners and losers and treating it all like it's as if the primaries are winner-take-all, the way that in the general election the Electoral College works, because that's not how it works. A state will give some delegates to each of the people who get votes in that state based on the number of votes that they got. So, in Iowa and in New Hampshire, in both cases, I believe all three of the lead candidates got delegates. My recollection is right now that it's Barack Obama 25, Hillary 24, and John Edwards 18, but I'm running from memory. But I think that that's, you know, with just a couple primaries that we've had. So we need to, you know, this is a process that's going to lead to, and then there's some 800 superdelegates I think there's a total of 22 or 2,400 delegates altogether. There are the superdelegates who are like the governors and the elected officials, state representatives, Democratic members of the United States House and the United States Senate, and Democratic governors and just the chairmen of the party, the chairman or chairwoman of the parties, the Democratic parties in each one of the states. And they can just go for whoever they want. There's a few who have already endorsed candidates, although Howard Dean in 2004, I think, had before Iowa, something like 50 or 60 or 70, he had a bunch of superdelegates who had already pledged to him, and then after he didn't do well in Iowa, they suddenly unpledged from him and went to Kerry. So I wouldn't be counting superdelegate votes yet, although they're included in some of the counts.
My guest is Tom Hartman of the Tom Hartman Program, heard Monday through Friday on 1450 WVAX, our sister station here in Charlottesville. Tom, were you so surprised as the rest of us when the early polling in New Hampshire didn't match up with the Democratic victor, Hillary Clinton?
Not really, because Barack Obama had only jumped up in the polls in New Hampshire for a couple of days before that. it was like following his win in Iowa. New Hampshire is retail politics, and when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton got out there and started shaking hands and meeting people, and the people there were really paying attention. I mean, I literally, every taxi ride I took, because I was staying in the Motel 8 out near the airport, and I had to come into town for the Radio Row, And every ride I took, you know, there was the taxi driver wanted to talk politics. Everybody, I mean, they're just like, I used to live there. I lived in New Hampshire from 78 to 83 and voted in the 1980 primary, as I recall, for Teddy Kennedy. And people are pretty savvy. The media story is that the moment that Hillary really got the vote, particularly the women's vote in New Hampshire, was when she had her emotional moment. My wife, Louise, who's a very astute political observer as well, said that she felt that it was when there was apparently Hillary was giving a talk and some guy was heckling her, yelling, "Iron my shirts, lady, iron my shirts." And so she said, "Let's turn the lights on and see who this guy is." And they put the spotlight on him, and he's yelling, "Hey, you should be ironing my shirts. You should be back in the kitchen." And then the security hauled him off, and that was the moment when she was a strong woman standing up to a sexist pig, basically. And Louise felt for her, you know, that was the moment when she thought, "Wow, this woman's got something that I think, you know, would be good." Not that my wife's, you know, is endorsing Hillary Clinton.
Right, right. So not the moment when supposedly she cried, which I may be the only person in America, but when I watch that video, I really don't see her crying. I see her talking softly and perhaps a little, you know, a little emotionally, but there's no sobbing going on.
No, it was like, well, Coy, it's kind of a tough time here for us in Portland with the storms.
Right.
I mean, you know, I don't think it sounds like I'm sobbing there.
Right. Go figure. Exactly. What are your thoughts on, let's look at the left and look at the right. Now, your thoughts on the Democratic candidates first, and then we'll talk about the Republican field.
On the Democratic side, I think that the way that we are badly served by our corporate media is that because we no longer have news in the United States, but instead we have infotainment, there's these so-called reporters are always looking for narratives. They're looking for stories. They're looking for the equivalent of a good novel or a good movie, a storyline that is compelling, that will, you know, keep people watching and bring eyeballs and thus generate advertising revenue. And so they've got to have a lot of drama, and they've got to have the narrative, and the narrative of, you know, isn't it exciting and amazing that an African-American guy is running? Isn't it exciting and amazing that a woman is running? Isn't it incredible how many people hate Hillary? Isn't it incredible how many people love Hillary? Isn't it incredible? You know, I mean, they're trying to find all these isn't it incredible things to say. And John Edwards, who is running fairly strong as well, the only thing that he's running on is that big corporations, including the big corporate media, should be broken back down to medium-sized corporations so there's room in the marketplace for competition and the American way, you know, to take us back before Reagan. And that is certainly not a narrative that the corporate media wants to talk about. So, by and large, they're ignoring him. And that, obviously I have some bias. I think he'd make a great president. But, frankly, I would vote for any of the three of them. But I think that that's the area where the reality check, you know, I've worked in Russia and they used to have a saying there, Pravda and Izvestia were the two main news services, and Pravda means truth and Izvestia means news. And they'd say there's no Pravda in Izvestia and there's no Izvestia in Pravda. And they at least knew it in the old Soviet Union. We don't know it. You know, we don't realize that there's no truth in the news, and there's no news in the truth, or no news in the networks that claim to be fair and balanced, or telling the truth. And instead, what we're getting are narratives, and we're getting drama. We're getting daily election drama, and I just think it's not a healthy thing for democracy.
So when they can't show you Britney crying or shaving her head off, they'll show you Hillary supposedly crying.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly right. You absolutely put your finger right on it, Coy. I mean that is what they want. They so desperately want the political equivalent of a Britney Spears meltdown, and if they can't have it, they'll make it.
So we need John Edwards to go into a barbershop somewhere and shave his head, but while he's doing it, talk about healthcare.
Yeah, right.
Tom Hartman is the host of the nationally syndicated Tom Hartman program. It's heard locally here in the Central Virginia area on our sister station, 1450 WVAX, each weekday from 12 to 3, or you can listen online at tomhartman.com. Tom, what do you think about the Republican field? We have basically a whole bunch of front runners.
Yeah, or a whole bunch of backbenchers. I mean, depending on how you look at it, or actually that's a British phrase, and maybe I'm using it wrong, but my sense of it is that the entire Republican field is a bunch of people that most Republicans are rather disgusted with, John McCain probably being the one guy that even people like myself, you know, would say probably, you know, or not probably, you know, has some integrity to him, and actually, I don't know if he'd make a good president or not, and frankly, I'm terrified of the idea of a Republican president in the next 4 years when we're going to have at least two Supreme Court justices almost certainly retire. You know, John McCain is about the only guy there that I think, you know, most ultimately at the end of the day, most Republicans are going to go for, which is one of the reasons why, you know, the Democrats have been basically frozen out of the Democratic primary because Michigan decided to go early against the wishes of the party, and so the party punished them by unseating their delegates.
Right,
you know, all that kind of thing. And so over on the Daily Kos, there's this thread right now about, hey, everybody in Michigan who's a Democrat, register as a Republican and vote for Mitt Romney so that Mitt Romney will win the state, and let's get him some momentum and let's make him the nominee, because if Mitt Romney's the nominee, then no matter who runs as a Democrat, they'll beat him. Whereas if John McCain is the nominee, he may actually be hard to beat.
So at this point, it looks like John McCain might be the one Republican who would really give the Democrats a run for their money.
I think so. I think so. And I think, frankly, he's going to be the party's nominee. But who knows? I mean, I've been wrong before. I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000.
Speaking of Ralph Nader, let me ask you this. I spent most of this past weekend putting together a play set for my 6-year-old twins, you know, the tunnel and the treehouse and the swing set. So I'm standing there working on this thing, and a buddy of mine who's helping me, we're talking politics, and he says, you know, he says, I'm not going to vote for any of them. I don't like any of them, Republicans, Democrats, they're all the same thing. And it made me remember, you know, Ralph Nader told us that in 2000 when he said, you know, Gore and Bush, they're the same thing. They're just two wings of the same business party. But here in 2008, I'll tell you, I think if Gore had been elected, we wouldn't be in Iraq right now. And it makes you wonder, well, maybe they're not the same thing. Maybe there are some very serious differences here. Your thoughts on that?
There are some very substantial differences. And you know, Ralph Nader's, frankly, the reason why I voted for him, in addition to the fact that I agree with him on virtually all issues and probably always have, you know, I mean, he's the progressive, but Louise and I lived in Vermont at the time, and we knew the state was going to go for Al Gore. And she voted for Al Gore. We just decided to split our vote, and I voted for Ralph Nader. And because we wanted the Green Party. Actually, I was voting for the Green Party. I wanted the party to get the 5% or 15%, whatever the threshold was that they had to hit in order to get federal matching funds. Just because I think, for the same reason that, you know, a couple weeks ago I went over and gave $50 to Dennis Kucinich's campaign, even though I think, even though I've given also to the John Edwards campaign and a little bit more than that, if the vote was today, I would probably vote for John Edwards because I think that he has a chance of beating any Republican, and I don't think that Dennis can, although, you know, who knows. But in any case, because I felt that Ralph Nader's voice, just like I think Dennis Kucinich's voice, needs to be there. But in 2004, I had him on the program, and I told him, you know, I'm not going to vote for you. Sorry, you know, and you were wrong. And you know, George Bush lied to us. He had told us he was going to be a united, not a divider. He told us he was going to pursue a humble foreign policy. He had told us he was going to bring people together. He lied. And it looked like, based on his being the governor of Texas, that might be the case. Turns out, the governor in Texas has very little power. The Speaker of the House in Texas has most of the power, and that was a Democrat during George's governorship, as I recall. So he looked like a decent bipartisan guy. He fooled us. And then in 2000, and frankly, you know, he stole the election. I mean, it's the Supreme Court appointed him president, not the. He lost by 5 million votes. Was it? Al Gore got more than George Bush.
Tom, Let's talk about your most recent book, which I'm not, if I'm not mistaken, it's Cracking the Code. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's right.
What is this book about? Why should people read this?
It's about the art and science of political communication. And my goal with that was to help people learn how to be effective communicators in general and specifically about politics. I mean, you can take probably all, if not certainly most, but I think probably all of the lessons of the book and apply them to any other kind of communication, from, you know, relationships to the workplace to whatever. But it's basically a toolkit for communications, competent communications.
And you refer in the book to restoring America's original vision. Flesh that out for us.
Well, I think the original vision of America was very much a we society. You know, Ben Franklin organizing the first fire department, say, you know, as a public utility. The idea of the public welfare, you know, right in the preamble to the Constitution of the United States, that we are creating a country that is a place where everybody has equality of opportunity and everybody has a certain level of safety available to them. In fact, you know, there were provisions for food and housing and medical care for the poor that were in place in the George Washington administration. The first veto of the James Madison presidency, he was the fourth president of the United States. His first veto was when one of these was being renewed, and they, instead of giving the money to a government-funded poorhouse in Washington, D.C., to care for the poor, they wanted to give it to a church and have the church administer it. And he said that it was unconstitutional, in his opinion, for the federal government to give any money to churches, to faith-based initiatives. And that was his first veto. So we have always, in my opinion, been a society that has said, we're not just a nation greedy individualists and, you know, to hell with everybody else and I got mine and that kind of mentality, that, you know, the kind of libertarian worldview. We have always been a nation that said we're all in this together. Now, you know, there's been, you know, obviously when we were founded, that part of the we that we're all in this together did not include things like African Americans and many women, tragically and unfortunately, but we've gotten over the years better and better at including everybody in that we. And that's a powerful vision. That's a vision that the rest of the world has looked to and said, we want that. We want to be like that.
My guest is Tom Hartman of the Tom Hartman Program. You can listen every Monday through Friday on 1450 WVAX. Phone lines are open at 977-1070. And Kim has been waiting quite patiently on line two. Kim, you're on with Tom Hartman. Go right ahead.
Great. Thank you, Tom. My wife and I are big fans of your show. Thank you very much. My question is, why you find John Edwards a stronger candidate against Republicans than Barack Obama. I agree with you on your John McCain analysis, but it seems Barack Obama appeals to, he's doing well with independents, quite a few moderate Republicans, and just his inspirational, you were talking about we, I think that sort of defines his approach.
I agree.
So I was wondering why you thought John Edwards had a stronger chance.
I'm not sure he does. I'm not sure that he does. I don't claim to be a prophet or a prognosticator. What I was saying is that in terms of the issues, that I'm probably more closely aligned with the positions and perspectives that John Edwards carries forward than with those of Barack Obama. When Barack Obama in Illinois, as a state senator, was charged with putting together a health insurance plan for the state, the original proposal said to insure every person in the state, and to set that as an absolute, this is what we're going to do. And Barack Obama brought in the lobbyists for the insurance companies, and by the time they were done, they had said, okay, we're going to set a goal of insuring every person in the state. And of course, obviously, it never happened because he brought in the insurance companies. And he says he's going to do the same thing as president. I think that would be a mistake. John Edwards, on the other hand, you know, if he got within 50 feet of a CEO of a health insurance company, kick the guy's butt. But Barack Obama is a brilliant speaker. I made the comment some months ago that got picked up on Huffington Post for a while that I felt that John Edwards could be the next FDR and Barack Obama could be the next JFK. I think they're both brilliant candidates and brilliant campaigners. Time will tell, and there's there's probably, I think there's, apparently, you know, the way things are going, a better chance that Barack Obama will end up the nominee of the party, although I would not discount the power of the Clinton machine when it comes to, particularly when it comes to the big states. My guess is that Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee, but we'll see.
Kim, thank you so much for the call. We've got a phone line open at 977-1070. If you've got a comment or a question for Tom Hartman, host of the nationally syndicated radio program, The Tom Hartman Show on WVAX, Monday through Friday from 12 to 3. Tom, are you... I find myself, and maybe I shouldn't be, but I tell you, I find myself really bothered by the fact that that Hillary Clinton is stepping forward, all issues aside, really, but that just that she's a Clinton and that here's another Clinton and we had another Bush, and it just seems like these two families are running the show, and it just seems to me that perhaps this is not what the founders had intended, that we would have a country where you could have just a small number of families. It's too much like England, let me just say that.
Well, and in fact, when John Adams' son, John Quincy Adams, ran for the presidency, had he not so significantly distanced himself from his father's positions and virtually ran against his father's positions, he wouldn't have become president, I don't think. And that issue was brought up at the time. I mean, people were totally freaked out. You know, what is this, a kingdom? We're electing the son of a former president. But it was, you know, two or three, I think it was three presidents later, maybe four presidents later, that happened. It wasn't bang, 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 bang like it is now.
Right, right.
There's this real sense of dynasty that is happening, and I'm very uncomfortable with it. You know, and frankly, we all know that Jeb Bush is waiting in the wings. He was the guy that the Bush family originally was grooming to be president. In 1998, they had the whole plan put together. Bush Sr. and Barbara had the whole plan put together for Jeb to be the guy. And Karl Rove blew it up, and because they didn't think that George Jr. was, you know, they thought he was too. They didn't think, you know, he could become president. They, you know, his record in being AWOL for a year, being a deserter from the military, and his history of alcoholism, his cocaine arrest when he was young, all those other things. They just figured, you know, all that stuff would make him impossible to become president. But Karl Rove just did a genius job of bringing him forward. So now they've got Jeb, and he's been term limited out of Florida, and he's waiting in the wings. And I have a feeling, you know, 4 years from now, you're going to see Jeb Bush running for president. Wouldn't that be weird?
Amazing.
Bush, Clinton, Bush.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. We're talking with Tom Hartman of the Tom Hartman radio program on WVAX. Phone lines are open, 977-1070. Tyler is online, too. Tyler, you're on with Tom Hartman. Go right ahead.
Hey, how are you doing today? Tom, I'm not that familiar with you, but you're a talk show host that's on sort of the left side of things.
I guess you could characterize it as that.
Okay. One phenomenon I think that's at work with Obama, and I'm probably conservative, although Lord knows anymore what I am. But I was saying the same thing about
being on the left. You know, it's who knows what that means.
Right.
I know a lot of conservative people think I'm completely unconservative, but nevertheless. I worked with a member of the House of Delegates here in Charlottesville who was black. He was a good friend of mine, and he won the House of Delegates seats here. And he's a conservative and a Republican, but there was a phenomenon at work that really amazed me, and I think this in part explains Obama's success. And it's more than the fact that people would like to see a black man get elected or a black man become president. I think it's even bigger than that.
I think that has very little to do with it, frankly. I think he's just like Bill Clinton. I think he's a natural-born politician. He's a brilliant campaigner.
Well, there's absolutely no question about that. He's a very articulate, great campaigner and a good candidate. But what I found with our campaign was there were a lot of people that came over to our side because they were white, and they felt like they had been made to feel by a lot of people that they were racist. And to them, this was their way of proving that they weren't. And all they wanted, they're happy to vote for a black candidate, but all they wanted was a reasonable candidate. And Obama fits that very, very well. And
yeah, he has not done what Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton did, which is basically run as, I'm the black guy. He has run as, I'm a guy who's running for president of the United States. And in fact, you know, one of his parents is white and one's literally African-American. And so I think that to some extent, to the extent that it's possible in America today, race is off the table. Frankly, I think his greatest vulnerability in terms of, you know, if he's the nominee, how the Republicans will come after him, is not the race thing. I don't think it's going to be so much the Harold Ford, you know, where they run an ad with a white girl going, hey, you know, Obama, call me. like they took down Harold Ford in Tennessee.
In Tennessee, right.
But I think that instead it's going to be the fact that his middle name is Hussein, and there's already a whispering campaign that he's part of a Muslim conspiracy when the guy's not even Muslim, he's a Christian.
And one additional thing that I find refreshing about Obama, and I don't agree with this politics, so someone like me to come out and say it's refreshing is, I think, eye-opening in and of itself. The fact that he's honest, or at least he appears to be. I mean, he comes out and says, yeah, I did cocaine and I did smoke pot, and there probably were not smart things for me to do, but let's just move on.
Yeah.
To me, that's refreshing.
Yeah, I was disappointed when Bill Clinton said, yeah, but I didn't inhale. I mean, at that point, we should have all gone, oh, boy.
Yeah. It's like Mitt Romney wanting to appeal to conservatives, just joining the NRA last year and saying he's a squirrel hunter.
Right.
Don't tell
he's
me
been
he's a
all his life. It's like, what, rats in the basement?
Yeah, I mean, come on, Mitt.
With a BB gun?
Yeah, goodness. I mean, it got steak. All right. Thanks very much.
Tyler, thank you so much for the call.
Thanks, Tyler.
We're talking with Tom Hartman. He is the host of the nationally syndicated Tom Hartman program. You can hear it here in Central Virginia on 1450 AM WVAX from 12 noon to 3 p.m. every Monday through Friday. It is the most listened to progressive talk radio show in the nation. Tom, before we let you go, I got a couple of minutes, but with what time we have, can you reflect a little bit about the economy? You know, it's the economy, stupid. A few months ago, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, I was talking with Chuck Todd of NBC News, and he said, you know, I think next year when we start getting into primary season, the issue is not going to be Iraq. It's going to be the economy. And I remember, you know, some listeners sort of laughing at that and saying, oh, the economy's doing great. But here we are in January in primary season, and boy, the economy certainly has become a big issue very quickly.
Yeah, it has, and it will continue to, because we're in a recession right now, and we might be going into something that looks like a depression. The dollar, if you were to add back in the cost of food and fuel, which we all actually have to pay for, other than, you know, the super rich 1%, you know, it's a very small part of their income, but for most people, it's a good chunk of your income. We're looking at 30-35% inflation in the last year. We're looking at an average inflation rate of 15-20% during the Bush presidency. In large part, frankly, I think, because they've been printing dollars like crazy. And this is why they stopped publishing M3, which is the number that tells how much they're inflating the dollar. Wall Street Journal ran an editorial on their editorial page, their lead editorial, you know, speaking on behalf of the editors a week or so ago, pointing out that from 2000 till today, just in the 7 years that Bush has been president, that if you were to denominate oil in gold rather than in dollars, it would be $30 a barrel right now. In other words, the price of oil hasn't gone up. The dollar has collapsed. And, you know, Bush has presided over this. And it's not something that hasn't been done before. Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon did the same thing as a way of paying off the Vietnam War. You run up big debts for a war, and then you inflate your currency, so you pay off those debts with cheaper dollars. It's what, the Weimar Republic tried to do after World War One, when Germany had all these reparations with the Treaty of Versailles, and it killed their currency. And I'm just frankly very concerned about the economy. I think a lot of people are. People are getting it. And that, you know, basically 26 years of conservative economic policies that started with Reagan and went on steroids with Bill Clinton with the WTO and NAFTA, and now, you know, on double steroids with George Bush Jr., that it's been destructive to working people in America.
And the end result of which is when I, you know, take my kids to the store, we go to the grocery store, that dollar I have in my pocket is worth much less.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, just think of the cost of a candy bar 10 years ago versus today, you know, or a cup of coffee, or, you know, anything. I mean, the dollar is collapsing. And when you destroy the currency of a country, it's a hidden tax on everybody except the very wealthy. The very wealthy do very well because they're the ones who are making the interest, you know, when the interest rates go up. They're the ones who are making out on inflation. The investor class does well with inflation. The debtor class and the middle class get wiped out by inflation, and that's what's going on.
One of the things that concerns me most personally is that, you know, to finance the war, we're selling bonds like crazy from China. We're borrowing money from China to finance this war,
mm-hmm.
and yet when we get in trouble, Saudi Arabia comes over and buys our banks. And that's what's happening, and not enough people know about that.
Yeah, and China has, you know, one of the Chinese generals last year, and it was never repudiated. He was never rebuked by the government. Said that they had over 100 nuclear weapons that they were willing to target at the United States if we tried to defend Taiwan, and they never backed down from that position. I mean, this is a country that literally has threatened us with nuclear weapons. Unlike Iran, who hasn't, you know, doesn't even, you know, they're 5 years away from even making one, and we can't build an ICBM right now. We can't build a weapon without parts from China. I mean, tell me how crazy that is.
Unbelievable. Tom Hartman, the host of the nationally syndicated Tom Hartman program. You can listen from 12 to 3 right here in Central Virginia on our sister station, AM 1450 WVAX. Tom, always enlightening and always an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Quay. It's been great, great being here with you.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.